The Guardian.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.
Football Weekly. Sunday's action raises once more refereeing controversy. The technology already exists, so is it time to introduce stabilisers for Ashley Young? The pod debates. Plus, FA Cup semi-finals, Chelsea's controversial Spurs clash. Andy Carroll emulates own career and heads backwards to book pool place in final two. We discuss those games. There's Sid on Chelsea-Barcelona and the other 73 Spanish teams in semi-finals this week. There's Premier League news, the title race. Carlos Tevez back from the golf course but still carrying his club. Plus the latest on the Football League and posts and tweets in Football Weekly. Right, back in the pod today, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi, Barry. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good. Thanks. Sean Ingalls here.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. And the long-awaited return of Fernando Duarte.
Hello there, guys. How are you?
Much to talk about with you, Fernando.
Oh, yeah.
Now, first off, once again this weekend, seeing a death on a football field, this time in Italy, the second division game between Pescara and Livorno and Pier Mario Morosini collapsing in the middle of the game. And it's still not sure why. They're going to do the autopsy today, but it's amazing how many times this seems to be happening. I don't know. Maybe statistically this is just something that happens, but extraordinary how often now we're having football games with a player either risking death or dying in the middle of it. Great to see the way that Italian football's reacted in this one case, suspending all games immediately, and the fact that clubs are kind of almost falling over themselves to assure that Morosini's sister, who's the only surviving member of his family, his mother died when he was 15, then his father died of cancer, then his elder brother, who was disabled, committed suicide. He's now died, leaving a sister who's in care of nuns, and Udinese, his club is actually owned.
Di Natale said he's going to take a...
Well, it's actually not Di Natale himself, he's going to announce it on behalf of the club, because Morosini was an Udinese player on loan at Livorno, that the club will now take care of Morosini's sister. But Atalanta, he was originally from Bergamo, where Atalanta's from, Morosini, they said that they would as well. So it looks like at least she will be taken care of, but one can't imagine what's going through her mind. But once again, we salute what sounds like a very courageous young man. And I don't know, I mean, people are worrying about whether the ambulance got there fast enough, but it just seems almost as if, I don't know.
There must be something fundamentally going wrong in the way players are prepared today. I mean, there must be, because I know that heart conditions, and there is a famous condition that affects very fit guys who perform at high level. There's even a name for that. There's like my best man, for example, at my wedding, he died like that. All of a sudden, he popped out, and nobody found out in the autopsy, etc., etc. So In the case of football, they need to keep researching that.
Well, the thing is that in Italy, they test, and this was discussed a lot after Miami, they test players more than anywhere else. But there's also a feeling that these are things that just happen. People in all walks of life do die. We're also not sure yet whether Morosini died, whether his heart stopped beating, or whether he had an aneurysm. Mm. There was a clash of heads in the game before this. It's possible that it was actually his brain that stopped before his heart.
The thing is, when you consider the amount of games that are played every weekend and the number of fatalities, it's a minuscule percentage of the players involved. I mean, I'm far from a very fit young man, but I have a heart murmur, for example, which I remember my dad told me about it. I think I was over the age of 20 by the time he got around to mentioning it to me. But like he got out a stethoscope, and I could hear it myself, you know, but it doesn't affect me in any way. But who's to say I won't just drop dead for no apparent reason?
One, Barry.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Some people out there are probably...
Some people now are actually kind of like beating their drums.
Cautiously optimistic it's going to happen, you know?
No.
Well, I have a heart murmur too. It sounds like a sort of meeting of the AA, but yeah, I do.
I'm Spartacus.
Do you have a heart murmur, Jimbo?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
If you get a stethoscope, I'll be able to tell you.
Yeah, possibly it's just one of those things. People, and this just happens to be on a football pitch, but there's something about it being in the middle of a sporting event
and the all the kind of vitality which sport represents that makes it doubly shocking when it happens. But there you go. A salute to Morosini and the way he handled the many difficulties in his unfortunately short life. This might sound strange, but I have to say that after that, one of the most uplifting things I saw this week was also on a football pitch. It was Craig Beattie going mental after his goal for Hearts in the Scottish Cup semi against Celtic. It was a really, I don't know, really positive.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was quite an interesting. I watched the game, and Celtic feel very aggrieved that they lost. They went a goal down, then a couple of minutes to go, they equalised with a goal that was marginally offside. And then Hearts got a penalty that shouldn't have been a penalty. You know, it was very much a ball to hand in the penalty area, and ref pointed the spot. Craig Beattie took the penalty against his old former club. Wasn't a very good penalty, but it went in, and then off he went, knees up in the air, took his shirt off, threw it away, and he's not the most toned footballer I've ever seen. Not a brilliant advert for the Scottish game, his muffin top over his shorts and his moobs jiggling in the Scottish sunshine. But yeah, I thought, you know, the only way it could have been improved is if he just charged all Forrest the way around the field and then straight down the tunnel.
No, it was a joy to watch, and looking forward to, I'm sure, we onto the Scottish Cup final, Hibs Hearts. So that'll get a lot of love.
Interestingly as well, Neil Lennon, which wasn't quite so uplifting, Neil Lennon said that he thought it's a personal thing that the ref gave the penalty against Celtic. And then he took to Twitter afterwards and started arguing with various supporters. So, yeah, it was...
Oh, well.
It's everything that Scotland needs now, isn't it? I mean, the Rangers in limbo, and then Celtic basically like a mad dog, kind of like, you know, fighting with their own shadows. I mean, what did they expect? That the other club would say, okay, now Rangers is almost out of business, we're all going to roll down for Celtic to reign in Scotland? No, the other teams are actually uplifted by that, because they can try to get Celtic a proper game.
Exactly. So. Well, Hearts taking on Hibs in the Scottish Cup final for the first time since 18-something. That's how long it is. Yeah.
Edinburgh should be a fun place to be that day.
Well, they'll be playing in Glasgow, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Edinburgh is always a nice town. Anyway, now, speaking of cup finals and refereeing controversy, what a weekend at Wembley in the FA Cup. Should we start with Liverpool? Because then when we do Chelsea, that'll bring us on to Sid. How about that? What about that Liverpool game? Fernando, you're a Liverpool fan. Were you happy with the performance? Are you uplifted?
Well, always good to be at Everton. You know, it's very interesting in local rivalries, etc. I feel sorry for them because they've sincerely been punching above their weights, and they had a very good game in the first half, and then because of that distant ball, they totally collapsed. Oh. Yeah, it was a shame, but they outplayed Liverpool in the first half totally, and I think that it's still... I mean, the FA Cup disguises how horrendous of a season has been for Kenny Dalglish and his peers. Good to see Andy Carroll kind of like... You know, scoring two vital goals, but I think the club still needs to do a lot of soul searching and trying to know what to do, because look at the mid table position and whatever they've been achieving. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're going to be out of Europe again, but nothing like a little injection of happiness. And I think the supporters deserved a bit of that.
Hmm. Well, would you rather be in the Champions League or win a cup?
Champions League, always. I mean, I love the Europa League, but seriously, it's not a place for a club like Liverpool. Sorry.
Mm. What do you think about Andy Carroll then, Sean? Two goals in two games?
Well, well done to him, but it's hardly... I mean, it's a start, but right. You know, I think the way some people are perhaps, you know, saying how he's rediscovered himself, it's too early. But yeah, two goals, two games. You know, well done to him.
Oh, I have to eat some humble pie as well. I was predicting that Kenny would be walking out in Dalglish fashion, in a Wembley toilet and all that. So May the 5th it is then.
I didn't see this game because I was doing a minute-by-minute report on Man City Norwich at the time. But from what I can gather, Everton seem to have kind of been uber-defensive and maybe bottled it again. Is that the case?
I mean, I think Everton did. Bottle is too strong a word, but they certainly didn't play to their best abilities. And it was a disappointing game. And Liverpool probably...
were amazing.
I think they were competent, they were good, they deserved a half-time lead, but the second half they didn't really show their best abilities.
Mm. What about Liverpool's chances then in the final against this Chelsea team?
Well, the bookies make Chelsea quite strong favourites. I think it's a pick and game.
Really?
Yeah.
Chelsea look very strong, though.
Yeah, but it's good to know they're going to be stretched a lot because of the Champions League. They lost Luiz yesterday, perhaps for a while, thanks to that knee injury. I don't know. It is also one game. It's a tough guess, but they should be considered the favourites for what they showed against Spurs yesterday, to be honest, and for what they've been doing this season.
This is their 10th cup meeting in the last 8 years. That's extraordinary, isn't it? And it's two seasons in a row that two teams who were due to be facing each other that day, May the 5th, in the Premier League, are actually going to be doing it in the cup final instead.
And one of the semi-finalists won the scored five goals in their semi-final. Remember, Stoke did that in the last FA Cup, and they lost in the final. A lot of Scouse supporters were like, putting these omens on Twitter last night. It was fun to read them.
Interesting. Anyway, so where are you from?
You were talking. They were saying that Chelsea won well, and they did.
Yes,
but they wouldn't have won well probably if it hadn't been for a terrible refereeing decision for that second goal.
Twisted blood tweeting. Interesting fact. One of Martin Atkinson's ancestors was lookout on the Titanic. Is it unfair to make it all about that though?
Well, I think it's. You know, the game was 1-0. It was delicately poised. And I know I sound like one of these socialist worker sellers, you know, foaming waves of indignation every time this comes up. But really,
no.
There needs to be a permanent revolution.
Please, Sean.
At some point. I mean, really, it's...
Yeah. But well, I think there will be. I mean, that's the thing. They've now said, we will introduce goal line technology. So, and in the meantime, I think Chelsea... I mean, Spurs, was that the only problem in this game? Or would Chelsea have won it anyway?
Spurs bottled it big time.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Listen, sometimes you play against the referee. You cannot just kind of like put your shoulders down, be hammered 5-1, and then say that only that goal decided the game.
But hang on a second. It was 1-0, then the referee's bad decision made it 2-0. Then when Bale scored, the referee should have, I think Spurs would have been to have had the penalty given against them and been playing against 10 men.
He played advantage.
No, but there's more of an advantage to have the penalty and be playing against 10 men. You have a 75 to 80% chance of scoring a penalty.
Sure. What if you missed the penalty, Sean?
He would have sent off check for what? Denying a goal-scoring opportunity. Yeah. But the goal was scored, so he didn't deny a goal-scoring opportunity.
But if he had blown up his whistle immediately, he could have got the penalty.
Yeah, then the referee would have denied the goal-scoring opportunity.
If you follow gambling, Spurs' odds shorter if they had gone 10 men in the penalty. Oh,
I can't begin to tell you how wrong your perspective on this is. Barry? No, I don't know. Okay.
Nothing more to add, really.
Nothing more to add, okay.
But I think if... With the goal line technology, we wouldn't be talking about this now. Well, we'd just come in, sit in silence for 40 minutes.
It was a really good game, though. I mean, it was really... It started off a bit slowly, the first 15 minutes, but it was bubbling up really nicely. I mean, Adebayor's really strong words. He says, you know, to be honest, I'm tired of it. And everyone is talking about goal line technology. They have to make something happen because it's killing the league. It's killing the FA Cup. It's killing the game. It's killing everything. Now, for a guy that was involved in... Yeah. The African Cup of Nations. I think that was perhaps a little bit over the top, but it shows the strong feeling.
The passion.
But
the passion.
He's
but
wrong.
One thing, the technology exists in a certain way. Philippe Auclair was saying that on Twitter yesterday. That a lot of cameras in these goals. You could do the replay thing. You don't need to introduce the new magic chip or the new Hawkeye.
Yeah. Just
put the system reference in front of a bloody telly because everybody could see that goal was ridiculously not a goal. And by the way, Chelsea supporters, stop whinging about the 2005 Ghost goal because that evened out yesterday big time. And by the way, minority supporters of Chelsea booing the Hillsborough moment of silence. Shame on you, you pricks.
I think we can all agree with that sentiment, if not necessarily the vocabulary in which it was expressed. What about Didier Drogba, eh? He's available on a free transfer in 76 days, Barry. Let's get our bid in.
For the podcast?
He's on a free transfer.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly still has a lot to offer. I saw at that time when he had a very poor run of form after suffering from malaria, knack, I thought maybe... that he would never come back from that, but he has. It'll be interesting to see how he gets on against Barcelona during the week.
Do you think he'll play?
I think he'll play a part. Right. He may not start. I mean, I know we're going to talk about that game later, but Barcelona, Javier Mascherano, if he's centre-half or playing centre-half, you know, he's quite a little man, and Didier Drogba is a very, very... tall, big man, strong man, and could pose him a lot of problems. Alternatively, with the high line Barca play, Torres nipping in behind them, he could also. So, why are you smirking at me like this?
I'm not. What about John Terry, eh? How brave is he? I'm sorry, crack ribs?
Oh, I mean, I he gets a lot of stick, but he deserves a huge amount of credit for playing with cracked ribs, because doing anything with cracked ribs is incredibly painful.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like drinking a cup of tea is painful if you've got cracked ribs.
Yep.
It's sleeping, crucial. Anything. Yep. So to play football with him, he's nails hard.
I agree with Barry. The only way they're going to win this tie, and I know we're going to talk about this again later, but they have to bully Barcelona into submission.
Right.
Try to do what Real have him, instead of bullying them with like horrendous tackles, etc. Do what Drogba does best, which is like being annoying people in the area. I remember talking to Lucio once when they had to play that, I don't know if it was a quarterfinal, the Champions League or semifinal. And Lucio had to play against Drogba all the time. He said, it was a nightmare. I had to be kind of like, it's almost like going to a boxing ring. Unbelievable, his clinching is, it was almost a jiu-jitsu belt, he told me. So Drogba is a kind of of a striker that annoys a lot of the defenders, and they don't relish playing against such a big guy.
Interesting. Before we move on to that whole Chelsea-Barcelona paradigm, what about Spurs? Hodgson for England, is it now?
Well, I watched the game with a West Brom support in Palamine yesterday, and the worse Tottenham got, the more concerned he became about Roy Hodgson becoming England manager instead of Harry Redknapp. I think a lot of journalists might have jumped the gun a bit in automatically assuming Redknapp would get the job. And
well, that was what they were fed, wasn't it?
No, well... Redknapp has not said anything to his players about the England job. Spurs, I know, have not been approached at all. Everyone in the press pack assumes that Redknapp will get the job, and you know, it's on the quiet. You know, things are happening, but certainly no official approaches have been made.
Well, what's your impression then, Sean?
I still think Redknapp will probably get it, but Redknapp has a history of making these late switches. You know, he may think he may change his mind, but certainly if Spurs weren't to qualify for the Champions League, it's an obvious point. It might be best for both parties if Redknapp joins England and Spurs get someone else in.
Because they want to be short of him.
Well, no, but I'm just saying that Redknapp may not want the rebuilding process that may come at Spurs if they don't finish in the Champions League.
Right.
And you've got Bale perhaps wanting to go, you've got a couple of other players that regard themselves very much as Harry's boys. Perhaps Adebayor probably won't stay, because I don't think Spurs can afford his wages.
Modric as well.
There could be a rebuilding task. And now Spurs are still one of the best sides in the country, but Redknapp, having gone so far with his team, may not want to then have to rebuild it.
They're currently level with Newcastle on 59 points, with Chelsea only 2 points behind. And the way that they are dropping points in the Premier League, or have been of late, you'd seriously worry about this.
Well, Spurs have the easiest run, and I think they only have played one team in the top 10. But as you say, they're not playing well at the moment.
Clear that the whole thing rattled them a bit, though. Even though you cannot blame it exclusively on the FA's selection process or anything like that, but clearly for many Spurs fans, it's going to sound like an unnecessary distraction in a vital moment for this season.
Absolutely. Alright, well, let's dial up Sid after a short musical interlude and find out what those crazy Catalans are saying ahead of Tuesday's big game at the Bridge.
Hello.
Hey. Now, Sid, Chelsea are taking on Barcelona this Tuesday. You're going to be in town for that. Chelsea with one or two injuries. Catalans, are they fit for this? What's their form in that?
Yeah, they're now 10 wins in a row in La Liga as they try and chase down that lead that Real Madrid have got at the top of the table. They're playing reasonably well. They struggled at the weekend. They only beat Levante 2-1, and they needed the kind of penalty that I think is described as a penalty light. It was one of those that probably is, but was very, very soft. And they're playing well. Virtually everybody's fit. Of course, David Villa still isn't. There's still one or two question marks about the full fitness of Xavi, who was taken off at the weekend and has that kind of ongoing Achilles problem. It's not really the Achilles. It's the soleil, which is the muscle around the Achilles. So it's not quite Achilles and it's not quite calf. But they do look fully fit, and I think they're relatively confident.
Sid, last time you were on, you were saying about how Barcelona regarded this as an opportunity to show that they don't need refereeing favours to win, and almost a chance to put the record straight. But deep down, they must be a little bit worried, because they know they got away with one that time, didn't they?
Of course they do, yeah. I think this is the part of the point that I was trying to make. Is they want the chance to prove that they don't need refereeing help, but they do know that on that occasion they were closer than they've ever been to being knocked out, apart from when they were indeed knocked out by Inter. But they think that Chelsea game was harder than the Inter game. They felt that they got away with it more than they ever had before. But of course, as I say, that kind of constant sense of people pointing the finger and going, "Oh, well, you only win because the referees," for a team that's that good, that really is, you know, has been, I think, clearly the best team in the world for the last perhaps 3-4 years. It must, you know, it is pretty frustrating from their point of view. Whether or not you share this is another issue. From their point of view, it is frustrating to have people point at referees. Now, they know they probably wouldn't have got to that European Cup final with a different refereeing performance, but they also feel, and I suppose they would, you know, from their point of view, it's like this, that they pushed and pushed and pushed and attacked and attacked and attacked, and the referee didn't give them Iniesta's goal, even if he did, of course, help them out by not giving Chelsea a couple of penalties. Or is it, how many penalties are we up to now? It's about 6, isn't it?
Sid, I think Chelsea, without defeat in their last 5 against Barca, which is quite sad, and Fernando Torres has scored 7 goals in 10 games against them too. Is there a sense of trepidation here? Because I know you've been speaking to Dani Alves, who's got some strong things to say about Chelsea.
Well, Alves was talking about, I mean, and Alves doesn't disguise the fact or hide behind the fact that they were fortunate they were under pressure. But he claims that the Chelsea, to some extent, have only got themselves to blame. You see that, you know, at a time when I'm going to say we now, because I'm, you know, looking at this from Alves' point of view, at a time when we were down to 10 men, when we were losing 1-0, when we were struggling, when things weren't going well, we were surprised that Chelsea didn't take a step towards us and try and attack us and try and really kill us off. And that when Chelsea didn't do that, the Barcelona players were kind of looking at each other and going, wow, okay. And then they went for it. So his argument is that, yeah, okay, there is a refereeing discourse in all of this, and yes, it's true that it was very, very difficult. I think he describes it as the hardest game, if I remember rightly, he describes it as the hardest game he's played as a Barcelona player. But he says that Chelsea pay for their own fear. They pay for their fear for not going for a team, and that if you keep stepping back, if you go backwards, 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 eventually you're going to get caught if you don't take a step toward the team. And so in that sense, to use the old cliche, fortune favours the brave, and it was Barcelona who went for it. Now, of course, you could argue Barcelona had no choice but to go for it, and trying to protect the lead you've got is natural. But Alves' point of view is that Chelsea paid for their own fear by doing that.
Of course. Listen, what about the other semi-final then? Real Madrid taking on Bayern Munich. Beckenbauer saying, I have seen Madrid in the Champions League and they are a normal team. They lack spontaneity. It is true. This is the first real test that Real have faced in the Champions League, is it not?
Yeah, and I think it's quite difficult to judge for sure just how good they are. I mean, they've been brilliant in Spain this season, and this weekend equaled the record, 107 goals, the most anyone's ever scored in a league season. They're the second top scorers in the Champions League, I think, on 32 behind Barca, who've got 33. And they've played really well. But I think there's an element of truth in that, because you look at who they've played, it's very difficult to judge them properly because they've not had a real test yet. I think we would probably all agree that the four strongest leagues in Europe are Spain, Italy, England and Germany. Well, Real Madrid haven't yet played a team from any of those leagues, and they're in the semi-finals. So
Wow. It's
hard to judge for sure. And then CSKA Moscow, and then followed by Apoel, who, of course, were, you know, despite the amazing things they'd achieved, were always going to get slaughtered by Madrid. So yeah, there's an element of truth in that. And I think this, again, is an opportunity maybe for Madrid. Well, we are quite good.
What on earth was that about?
I think that was an email coming in.
You've got his own elephant, haven't you?
Yeah. Sid, listen, I know your wife's away and you're eager to chat, but we can't hang around too much longer. But I did want to just ask you about the prospects of an all-Spanish final in the Europa League.
Yeah, very strong prospects. Of course, at least one Spanish team will get there because Atletico Madrid play Valencia. Mm-hmm. It's an all-Iberian semi-final, and it does help the Spanish to respond to that argument that La Liga is not very good. It's a two-horse race, but not because everybody else is a donkey.
Yeah, you could easily have all four finalists in European competitions being Spanish.
And let's not forget that Athletic Bilbao bitch-slapped United recently. So, you know, I think this claim is kind of like...
I think that was the headline I saw. Bilbao bitch-slapped.
Fernando's very, you know, potty-mouthed today.
Yeah.
It's a good headline, though. I quite like it. And they did, didn't they?
Sid, that's fantastic. Look forward to catching up with you. Enjoy your trip to sunny London, and we'll hopefully get hold of you on Thursday somehow.
Thank you very much.
By the way, Sid, I want to ask you, you were cooking your dinner the other day. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning?
No.
How did that end up?
I wasn't cooking my dinner. It was a metaphor.
All right.
For what?
Come on.
It was...
Just because it means something totally different in Portuguese. And when somebody's cooking dinner late at night, I mean...
What does it mean?
It was a metaphor for the fact that I was trying to balance about 15 different articles at once.
All right.
I'm afraid it was a stupendously boring dinner I was making. It wasn't actually cooking dinner.
Fernando's meat in
What's
the oven.
What's Fernando's
thing? I'm guessing. I think it's kind of pot roast. Yeah. Anyway, Sid, we really must let you go. And do enjoy your trip, etc. And, yeah, speak to you on Thursday, I hope.
Okay, nice one. Cheerio.
Cheerio, Sid. Tell you what, Fernando, since you're in such irrepressible mood, tell us all about what's been going on in Brazil.
Where should I start? I mean, should I go for the crazy things or for the normal things?
Well, I don't know. How crazy are the crazy things?
Well, the bee swarm attacked the players in a Bahia state championship match this weekend, and Fluminense defeated Santana. We were playing, and the bees invaded the pitch, and there's some hilarious images of the players on the floor, kind of like just lying down.
Like Ashley Young, yep.
Yeah, exactly. But Ashley Young, he would be twisting, so the bees would be stinging him. Right. Anyway, and it's those kind of things. When the state leagues, they happen, you see a lot of teams.
Is that common? Killer bees on pitches?
No, very common. It happened before, but it's not like the ball boy the other day in Sergipe, one of the other states. The ball boy avoided a goal. It was brilliant, and then he was interviewed on every state league. Pretty much.
We say he avoided it. He actually saved them.
Yeah. Well, the opposition came, rounded the keeper, and rolled the ball to the goal, and he walked in the pitch and kicked it away.
Speaking of strange things, did anyone see the Wagner Love interview with Brazilian Playboy? I'm sure you're a subscriber, Jumbo. He was talking about orgies and the like, but he was asked about difficulties of sex in Russia, and he said you can still do it at home, in restaurants or in shopping malls, because there is always heating, so no problem. The issue is out on the street. I did not mess about doing that in the street because I'm not tough enough to do it when it's minus 27, minus 30.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure he was misquoted on that, because
you can do it on the street.
No, it's not that, but even him wouldn't be that crazy to do, like, in public places, you know. You know, the love in Wagner Love is because he was once smuggled a girl into the team hotel when he would steward, like, at the B team in Palmeiras. So his love, because he was making love, etc. But he's a fantastic Lothario.
He was preparing his dinner.
He was preparing his dinner a lot. I don't think he was going to do, like, in a shopping mall in Moscow. I mean, it's already
maybe
a very strange place.
Maybe he fancied a bit of takeaway, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he was eating out, Anyway.
Yeah, I also recommend you guys take a look at Ganso's goal for Santos this weekend.
I have to say, I wasn't that impressed. You came in full of this Ganso goal. I wasn't that impressed.
Oh, yeah, because, that chip over the keeper wasn't anything.
No, it was
all
a
right.
Lovely chip, but there's no Peter Crouch.
Yeah, but it's in the weekend that Santos, the most famous Brazilian club, completes 100 years. I mean, this is the club Pelé used to play, so there's no better way for their number 10 to score an amazing goal, and that's also fuels Brazilian with hopes, because London 2012 around the corner, and Brazilians pretty much want to win it, that always elusive gold medal.
Yeah. Speaking of Brazil, good news, Teixeira's finally gone.
You could say that because of the person he wasn't a pleasant character at all, and, with all the accusations, he had become a liability. But then again, for 23 years, he was the strongest man. It was a bit much like Libya and Gaddafi. Now he's gone. A lot of people are going to be fighting for his spoils.
Right.
And I don't know that this is going to be good for Brazilian football. In a moment, are we struggling with the whole World Cup thing? I'm not going to say that I'm sad to see him going, but it's a shame that there seems to be no substitute for him. And the guy who came in now is a total lunatic. He was once seen nicking a medal from a youth tournament ceremony. It's bizarre. The problem with Brazil is that too much politics involved with the game. And it's ridiculous. It's almost like the county associations could have power over the FA.
Didn't Ronaldo get touted as a possible replacement for Tisha?
Yeah, I would love to see Ronaldo kind of like taking more part of, actually for players, Brazilian players should be taking more part of the game. But Ronaldo owns a sports marketing agency. He actually works with sports marketing, with accounts, etc. So it's a bit of a conflict of interest, isn't it? The funny thing is, he's involved with the CBF, and Folha de São Paulo a couple of months ago found out that his company was kind of like intermediating contracts for World Cup stages. So it's a bit weird. I mean,
he's got his finger in lots of pies, and who would have thought that?
Yeah, who would have thought that? I mean, he's a good name. People are talking about a lot about the succession, about players who should be involved, even saying that Zico should be around, and Zico has experience. He was the national secretary for sports. I just think that the way their FA is structured now, they need a revolution, and they need to actually sort things out in the way the president is elected. Local associations, if you see when the national team travels abroad, a lot of politicians are actually with the team. It's like congressmen. It's bizarre. It's a portrait of how crazy the game is. At the moment, if only they can concentrate on doing the stuff right for the World Cup, it would be a plus.
All right. How concerned are you for the World Cup?
I'm not concerned about the hosting the tournament itself because security is not going to be a problem. They're just going to deploy the army like they always do in big events. The stadiums are going to be ready. It's the infrastructure. It's the legacy in a way that this was a golden opportunity for airports in Brazil to be refurbished, for cities to do like transport or another infrastructure project to actually improve a bit the lives of the citizens for post-World Cup. Of course, this is not only to blame on the Brazilians. FIFA is very greedy, and some part of this confusion in regards to the World Cup general law is to do with FIFA's demands for tax-free money, etc. I'm not going to say the Brazilians should have read the contract before they moaning, especially the authorities, because they were happy to jump on the bandwagon and hug Ricardo Teixeira at FIFA. But I'm just sad that it seems that the cup was going to leave no legacy, and I'm pretty sure the South Africa should have been a lesson to that. Okay, we need stadiums, yeah, but they're going to build stadiums in Cuiabá. It's a place that hasn't even got a proper professional league.
All right. Well, in no way evocative of the situation for London 2012, I'm sure. Fernando, fantastic stuff. Sounds like a fitting place to bring part two to an end. And a stonking part three is just around the corner. All sorts of excitement going on in the Football League. Charlton winning promotion to League One with Chris Powell there, looking very emotional. Great stuff. And in the Championship, Barry, you were very excited by the battle at the bottom there, Doncaster Portsmouth.
Yeah, they played whoever lost was going to get relegated. They're probably both going to get relegated anyway, but Portsmouth have at least given themselves some faint hope of staying up. And how? It was a remarkable game. Portsmouth won 4-3. They were 2-0 down after a couple of minutes. And then Dave Kitson decided, apparently having not done a great deal for Portsmouth at all this season, put in an absolute masterclass. He was through on goal, and rather than take a shot, he I wouldn't say dive. Barney Rone some weeks ago described Andy Carroll as sort of the football equivalent of an ox carcass being flung from a medieval catapult. And that's kind of how Kitson went to ground to win a penalty with no one near him. Look it up if you can find it. I think I saw it on the BBC website this morning. I was showing it to somebody. Got a penalty, got Portsmouth or Doncaster's defender Habib Bey sent off as well into the bargain. Doncaster recovered, so it was 3-2 in injury time, and then Kitson slam dunked a high ball into the net, and the goal was amazingly given. Portsmouth also got a penalty, which was for a foul that wasn't even in the penalty area, so they really, really rode their luck and ended up winning. So yeah, Doncaster, they survive another week, yeah.
Well, I read that Doncaster had been relegated already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but they were relegated on Saturday. And then as in an interesting postscript, I think it was Saturday night, El Hadji Diouf got arrested after a brawl in a nightclub in Manchester, which left a man in hospital with serious head injuries.
Oh.
And Anton Ferdinand was also questioned by police. He was there but not arrested.
Oh, how interesting.
So it was not a great day at the office for El Hadji Diouf.
Indeed not. Now, the other end of things, all sorts of exciting games. You had Reading beating Southampton. Brilliant performance there by the Royals, who were once 16th not so very long ago and are now top of the Championship.
That was a marvellous game, actually. Yeah. I don't know if you saw it, but Reading had 3 shots on target, scored 3 goals.
Brilliant stuff.
So it's called efficiency.
Yeah.
West Ham absolutely mullered Brighton, but remain in third place, 3 points behind Southampton, although with that 6-0 win, they've brought the difference in goal difference down to just 3. But
it's probably going to go to the wire. John Ashton was at that game, and he said Sam Allardyce was very morose afterwards, despite having seen his team win 6-0. Sort of the vibe, I think, being, well, why can't they play that more like that more often, you know?
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, he spent a lot of money. His reputation's a bit at stake if they don't go up automatically, you know? And West Ham are masters of actually throwing chances, etc. They spend an extra season in the Championship because of basically fluffing a playoff decided one day.
Mm. Producer Ben wants to point out that if you want to see more of these top games, they'll all be featured in Late Kickoff South, South West and West Monday night on BBC or on the iPlayer.
Is that you in, James?
Hey?
Is that you in?
Let me just, yeah, that's for me, actually. Yeah, true.
Well, Fernando won't be able to watch that because he's busy on Denmark Street tonight.
That's true, Fernando. What are you going to be doing in Denmark Street?
Tonight, James, I'm playing the bass for my band, The Tape Machine. We're doing
The Tape Machine?
Yeah, The Tape. Yeah, we're doing a gig on Denmark Street, a place called The Alley Cats. We're going to be murdering some 60s jams.
Right.
Beatles, a bit of Stones, and some 70s as well because there's CCR involved. So, right. And a bit of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And I would like to see the situation to send a big hug to Mr. Tom Petty, my follower on Twitter. Yeah.
Tom Petty, yep, following Tom Petty, you on Twitter?
Yeah, yeah. I follow him, he follows me, and right. He's had five guitars stolen.
Isn't that a Genesis one?
Huh?
Never mind, move on.
He's had five of his guitars stolen this weekend in California, including a 1967 12-string Rickenbacker that needs to be returned. And
that's just sick.
My prayers are with my friend Tom Petty.
Well, absolutely. That's exciting. Of course, Denmark Street, very much a historic musical avenue. Tin Pan Alley, is it?
Exactly, yeah. We were trying to get the 12th Club, but we got the Alley Cat Monday night gig. It's free, so you know we're going to be murdering some stuff there.
Right. Okay, then.
What are you waiting for, listener?
Yeah.
Stop listening to this and go.
Yeah. Good. What time does it start, Fernando?
8 o'clock.
Right. It's a bit early.
Yeah,
but
it's rock and roll.
It won't start at 8 o'clock.
Oh, I see.
It started.
Okay. And it's Brazilians playing rock and roll, so you know that's going to take ages for us to actually go on stage.
All right. Good. Now, what we haven't mentioned yet is all the Premier League stuff that happened this weekend. And, we're going to start at the bottom or the top? You want to start at the top, Sean? All right. Let's see. Title race. 5 points of difference. 4 games to go. Could come down to goal difference. Ooh, big win for City, wasn't it? 6 and the City. I'm sure there were some headlines along those lines, weren't there? After
They were really impressive. It was interesting that they've scored 4.3 goals a game now with Aguero and Tevez both starting. Thanks to Opta for that. And Silva had his first assist since January 22nd.
So is that 10 goals in 2 games, two terrific performances, and Mario Balotelli was involved in neither? Coincidence?
I don't think so. I think Balotelli clearly is a disruptive influence, despite being a very good player. And I think City are probably, without him being around, probably just got on with playing. Although, to be honest, at 2-1, I think Norwich had chances, didn't they, to make it 2-2.
It was a very good game. Norwich started well and then were 2-0 down at half time, but came out of roaring out of the traps of the second half. And I thought, God, they're going to equalise here, but then City just ran riot. I think if I was a City fan, they're in a bit of a pickle with Carlos Tevez, because he's shown them, he's playing brilliantly, and he got a hat-trick, was unlucky, should have got a penalty as well, he was unlucky to be booked for diving because he was fouled, but he's shown them what they missed over 5 months, and you have to think that if he'd been playing, they'd be well clear in the title race.
Is it time to question Mancini's judgment? I know we all kind of felt really aggrieved by he's supposed now to go on the pitch, but I'm starting to think, hang on, if he was that bad, first of all, why bringing him back just because you needed him? And second, if Mancini knew he could do that, why didn't he bring him before?
Why was he on the bench in that game?
Yeah.
Well.
No. Not in the game in Munich. I'm saying that, if it was a matter of, saying that even though he did, because first of all, he said he was never going to play for the club again, and then he backtracked. But since he was going to go back on his own word, why not bring in Tevez before?
Because Tevez was in Argentina.
Yeah, Tevez was in Argentina. He didn't want to come back. His advisors were trying to sell him to Italy.
Yeah. That would be the reason, probably. you were at... Were you at Old Trafford for the Man United Aston Villa?
Yes, I was. I was invited by Conchitoro, the sponsors, to watch the game at Old Trafford. Yeah.
Okay.
And I accepted happily, and I don't have to say Conchitoro every time I say that was an Old Trafford courtesy of Conchitoro,
Right. Is that wine?
Yes, the wine. Yeah, they're the official wine suppliers of
Man
United.
Does it slip down as easily as Ashley Young?
It does. It's Chilean wine, Chilean Merlot. That goes down really well.
Young. Yeah. Okay. What did you think of Man United?
I was impressed by them yesterday. I think they rose to the challenge of actually, having City breathing on their necks. And Villa didn't perform that well yesterday. They've been under all sorts of pressure. But it was a very solid display. And by the way, Valencia yesterday, he was unstoppable on that right side with Rafael there. Rafael missed a few passes, etc. But they seemed to work a lot. A lot of the time, they were basically taking the initiative and going from the right. As though Evra almost didn't touch the ball in the first half, at least from where I was standing. Funny to think that I heard that they're going to split the twins, apparently. There's a story today, I think, on the Telegraph that they might use Fabio as a make weight for some kind of transaction with a Portuguese club.
And, oh, really?
Yeah,
which
will be the first time the twins don't play together or don't even live in the same postcode, yeah.
Really? Oh, okay. That'd be sad. Okay, well, meanwhile, down at the other end...
So we're not going to talk about Ashley Young being...
What do you want to say about Ashley Young? It's horrible.
He's a persistent cheat, though. He's like, you know, Charles Bronson, the criminal from Luton, that, you know, he got in for a minor.
Oh, yeah.
And kept reoffending. And now he's still inside. Young, if diving was a criminal offence, Young would still be inside off, because he's been doing it for years and years. Right. Villa fans at Watford will tell you as well.
Are you comparing Ashley Young with Charles Manson?
No, Bronson.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. But, sorry, Barry.
I know, I just think it's very disrespectful. Well, Sean's pretty much covered it.
All right, yeah. I think everybody has. I think everybody, any right-thinking follower of football would be horrified by Ashley Young's continued determination to cheat the opposition and fans, etc.
Would love to see that the same way they get terrified by Barcelona antics or by European. Okay, in Europe, they dive a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they dive a lot in Europe, and they never die in England. When, I repeat here, Michael Owen won two penalties in two different World Cups by diving blatantly. Mm. Enough said.
Ashley Young's won 8 penalties since the start of last season. That's the highest of anyone in the Premier League.
Really?
Luis Suarez next on 5, then Walcott on 4, and then there's a host of players on 3.
Hmm. Good. Okay, well, now I'm going to get back to the situation at the bottom, where things took a turn for the worse for Blackburn and QPR. QPR, of course, not in the bottom three yet, but one or two games to be played that might put them there. Bolton, for example, yet to play. Blackburn had their 5th straight defeat and saw Hoylett and Yakuba go off injured in their loss at Swansea. And QPR, of course, lost at West Brom. Wolves got a point. SW4 Chelsea 0, apparently, as the username says. Cutaways of Terry Connor on the touchline are priceless. He looks like he's just come out of the newsagents in time to see Jerry Beadle reversing a steamroller over his new car. Poor chap, he does look absolutely miserable, doesn't he? But he got a point at Sunderland.
Did he even want the job? Is it like Wisnail and I'm manager of Wolves by mistake?
Yeah.
But apparently that game was the dullest game of association football ever played.
Really?
Apparently so. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm entitled to disagree. It was a Champions League final 2003.
Ah.
AC Milan and then Juventus.
Well.
I had to sleep in a train station in Manchester because the game took so long and I missed my train to Liverpool.
Some people think Dostoevsky's dull, Fernando. What? No. It's just a matter of taste, isn't it?
Yeah, I am part of some people.
Right. Okay.
Overrated Russian, as usual.
Right. Well, there you go. And I think that's it. Have we discharged our Premier League duties?
I just wondered whether Fernando liked the idiot.
Ah, interesting.
Which idiot? I wrote Crime and Punishment enough to never read anything that guy wrote again, you know.
Right.
How boring.
Okay. Yeah. I've never read any Dostoevsky.
Have you?
Oh, God, no. I read Tolstoy, and that's about as far as I could get.
Crime and Punishment should be called Punishment, because it is Punishment.
Anyway. Nice one, Fernando, and we'll speak to you all soon.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.